Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Life Open Miracles with Vincent Sandee. Today's topic is freedom from toxic relationships. This is an important topic because sooner or later we all have similar problems, even though for some people might be a little bit more dangerous than others, let's say. What we do is to find situations in life that express our unresolved conflicts, our problems that we have emotionally within ourselves, within our souls, patterns that repeat themselves, that are unconsciously there, you know, coming up and show themselves. Well, what I want to share with you today on the show is a fabulous guest. Her name is Monique. I'm going to introduce you to her very soon. But first of all, today, I don't know why, I felt inspired to read from a chapter of my Soulmate Connection online course. I usually follow my intuition when something comes up. And before we start talking about this, I would like to read you this, not all of it, but part of this chapter. Many people have lived in a cocoon or have closed them off due to suffering. After some time, they have come to believe that they are not worthy of any healthy relationship and stuck in their own loneliness. Some other people are scared of relationships and think that they can be a curse to the people around them. This leads to self-punishment and fear of damaging oneself or damaging others. My dear friend, if this sounds familiar, please understand that your relationships can fill your life and that you can be of great inspiration for others. Be willing to take risks. Be willing to be a blessing to yourself first and then to others. Improve yourself by associating with other people. Practice loving care and make your presence nurturing for others. Give attention to people. Do it without expecting anything in return, even though doing so will enrich your life. Start seeing other people for who they are, beings who are in need of love and care, just as you are. We all need love in one way or another. But then we have to deal, when we meet a person, we have to deal with those things within ourselves that the other person is just lighting up here and then. Because what is the purpose, not just of a soulmate relationship, but of all relationships, is to teach you something, to teach you and to mirror you, who you are. If you want to know, of course, just go to my website, which is joycelestial.com. And of course, you can sign up for my newsletter there, Life Coaching Mystical Lessons for free. And now let's welcome our guest, Sarah Strudwick. Sarah, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here. How are you?
Hello, Sarah. How are you? Thank you for coming in and being a guest on the show.
You're welcome. I wish I could fly into Thailand and do it personally.
Well, yes. Well, it's not
I'm
a bad place
in,
to
I'm
be,
there
I have
metaphorically.
Sarah, would you like, please, to introduce yourself? Sarah has many different websites. So let me tell you just a couple of words about you. She has different websites. She's the author of a book that is titled Balls, and where she talks about toxic relationships and how to get out of them. Then she has a website which is called nonarylife.biz, and she does spiritual life coaching. She does a lot of energy work. Am I right? Am I introducing you well?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I do. And I did the energy work long before I wrote the book. The book kind of happened along the way. I was originally planning to write a book about spirituality and then got sidetracked a little bit along the journey, as it were. So I've got noordinarylife.biz and butterflyeffecthealing.com. The book site is Dark Souls, the book. But you can find the book on Amazon as well if people are interested in it.
Yeah, and the butterfly effect is like the main through which you work, which is basically saying a small change has an effect that then becomes huge in time if it's done from spirit. Is
yeah,
that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's more the focus on not necessarily being able to change other people, making the changes in yourself.
Exactly. Making changing yourself yeah. first, so that then all the environment then will have that change reflected in the environment itself. All right with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, that's the focus on my energy work, more you making a change in yourself and not it trying to change other people or hoping that other people will change. Sometimes people do change as a result of you changing yourself, and sometimes they don't, depending on the type of person that you're in relationship with.
Or eventually new people would come in, the old ones will move out. Probably there's
yeah,
this kind of...
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, the relationships that aren't good will drop away, and then new people will replace those other people.
So how much important is energy work, in your opinion, when it comes down to relationships, down not yet toxic relationships, how much is important to, you know, work on your energy?
Oh, it's really important. Some relationship counselors will focus on the relationship as an entity in itself. I personally don't do that, and I know a lot of the therapists that I work with don't do that either. It's because if you're focusing on it as being an entity, a relationship, it's then people agreeing to do things that perhaps they wouldn't normally agree to do, and then usually it gets complicated. If you focus on two individual beings, and then they can make a compromise, and what will happen is the changes will make in each other, and then either as a result the relationship will develop or it will separate. But you can't make a relationship out of two people if the two people have got issues in the first place.
Yes, I agree upon that, because I believe that, in my opinion, especially when working with astrology a lot, so what I do, there are two ways of looking at the chart when two people come together, for example. Now, there is the synastry chart, where you put one chart on top of the other, but the two charts are still different, but you see how they relate to each other. And then the split chart, or the divisional chart, where the two charts actually become one chart alone. So what I've seen with many people is that when they are analyzed two different entities, two different persons, they still have great potential for something beautiful, because they have things in common, or one thing can be one planet or one kind of energy can be used to support another side of themselves. But when you put them together, maybe there are challenges that are really heavy. So I always say to them, what kind of relationship are you in? Are you in a relationship where you unite those two entities into one, or are you in a relationship that where you are supporting each other? And so I believe that the relationship is, it might exist, but I think it's really, really rare. Instead, a supporting relationship, it's a much better focus, because you still support each other, but you are not... You're not dependent on how you two are connected together. So, I don't know if this is clear.
No, absolutely. I agree with you. And also, the other thing is if you're focusing on the other person, then often the person is focusing on getting their needs met through the other person rather than being confident in themselves and not
right.
worrying about getting their needs met through the other person in who they're in relationship with. Once they do that, then they feel comfortable in the relationship anyway, and it becomes less of a challenge for them.
Right. So, what is, now let's get into the topic of the show today. What is, how would you define anyway, a relationship?
A toxic relationship, okay. Well, there's various levels of toxic relationships, and obviously my experience is the extreme end of a toxic relationship with an extremely toxic, disordered person. I'm not going to go into the psychology of it, so I'm not going to use lots of psychological terms. But we're talking about having a relationship with somebody that is extremely disordered. In psychology terms, you could call them a psychopath or a narcissist or somebody like that. But so there's different levels. So you could have a toxic relationship that was abusive, that was controlling, that was all of those things or one or other of those things. With the dynamic of an extremely toxic relationship, which I was involved in, was involved with somebody who was a disordered personality, which is the extreme. And the reason that it's so extreme is because it's extremely dangerous. There was an analogy that you basically, if you were in relationship with somebody like that, you end up feeling like you've had the death of a soul, basically, at the end.
Right. It turns you off, basically. Turns your light off.
Yeah, you feel like your life force has just literally disappeared. Now, there's a number of reasons why anybody would have a relationship with somebody like that. And I'll talk about that later, but...
you think self-punishment is one of them?
There's self-punishment. There's a number of different reasons. Core belief.
Okay.
You mentioned earlier the soulmate chapter, which was beautiful. The problem with these types of people is they're very good at mimicking to be like something else. I call them shapeshifters in the book. So the person who is in relationship with them, because of their reasons for wanting to be in relationship with somebody that, for example, they may have low self-esteem. Usually the people, the victims of them, are having low self-esteem, low confidence, negative self-beliefs. They may have a childhood abuse, various different things. Not always, but often.
Right.
If they are going into relationship with somebody like that, the other person can spot those weaknesses in them, and so therefore they can mimic themselves as being the perfect person for them, and in the beginning stages of the relationship come across as being the perfect soulmate. So when they first meet them, it's a very fast moving relationship. So the very first red flag that would come up would be a relationship that moves extremely quickly. A normal relationship takes time. It takes time to bond with people and get to understand them and learn them.
Like moving extremely quickly means, for example, great love together, going, sharing activities at a high level, moving in together very quickly, talking about sharing your life.
Yeah, it would be very quick, and usually the intimacy, so the sexual part of it, would be extremely quick. Often women who have been in relationship with these people have said that they've had sex on the first date, for example, and there's a reason for that. So the person who's in relationship with them may immediately feel this loved up feeling that they're in love with this person who feels like $1 million when they're with them at the beginning. And they feel that they have a lot of common interests because the person that they're with has seen all the vulnerabilities. So they may share things with them that are similar. They may say to them, for example, oh, we've got very similar childhoods. That say, for example, the person has come from childhood abuse, okay? So the other person will say to them, because they're very good at lying, so they would say, oh, yes, I had childhood abuse when I was younger. So they form an immediate bond with them to get the relationship to move more quickly than perhaps a normal relationship would. And so the person...
Do you think they have a conscious strategy behind this? Or just because of who they are, it comes natural to them?
Basically, in the extreme disordered personality, they have no conscience. Now, that's very difficult for somebody to get their head around, because the type of people that go into relationship with them are extremely conscious, and they usually codependent personalities or empathic or they have issues themselves. There's no question about that. but the people that are in relationships are worried about it's always their fault, something wrong with me, I must try harder, I must be nicer to these people. So the more the relationship gets more and more abusive and the more it goes wrong, the more the victim will blame themselves and think that it's their fault. They will think that, well, it must be something that I'm doing wrong. They do not realise that they're in a relationship with a person that literally has no conscience. And that is the key factor with an extreme relationship. The person that they're in relationship with has no conscience whatsoever. And what happens is, they try, the victim or the person that they're with tries to, doesn't want to believe that for whatever reason. It could be because they want to believe the good in everybody. So they make up for it with cognitive dissonance. So, for example, if somebody tells you something that isn't true, you'll get a funny sensation in your solar plexus and it feels wrong, okay? If somebody tells you something, you will either do two things. You will basically change your behavior, or you'll justify your behavior by changing the feeling that you have in your body. So when something doesn't add up with these people, you'll think, okay, well, there's no evidence to back up what I'm feeling, so I must be imagining things, I must be making it up. And I must, and these people must have a conscience because everybody has a conscience. But the minority population don't have a conscience, and that can be extremely dangerous. You know, I've had lots of arguments with spiritual people, with light workers, and I am a spiritual person, where they have literally said to the people that, you know, this is your you know, the people will change. They will get better. They will do this. They will do that.
Exactly. I was about to ask you this. Exactly.
So this is quite dangerous, yeah, because it puts some false hope for the victim in thinking that they're in relationship with somebody that is going to do something different. They are never going to do anything different. They have no conscience. They would do this to you, or they would do this to somebody else, or to anybody. So the person in relationship with them is feeling this false hope, false sense of hope that, and I got sucked into that for at least 18 months with it. Yeah.
I would like to ask you then. I'm curious about knowing something, because there is a chance anyway. I'm sure that somebody who is in a real toxic relationship should be moved out right away without hoping that that person would change, especially if he has deep psychological problems of any kind. But how do you recognize it? Let's say you're inside a toxic relationship. Is there a way to recognize a relationship that can eventually improve and get better and two people, you know, heal, instead of a relationship that has no hope at all?
That has no hope at all.
Yes, I mean, if you are in a, you don't know, okay, you are in a relationship that has problems, there are emotional problems, but maybe, how do you recognize if that is a relationship that you can actually heal, or if you are in a relationship that you can't heal, and therefore you are in a desperate situation, and you better move away, let's say.
Well, if you're in a
relationship, there's a chance for keeping.
Right.
Yes.
Well, the key signs of any kind of toxic relationship, and not just disordered personalities, is how they react towards you. Okay. So some
right.
of toxics might use is lying, manipulation, and they might control you. Be very controlling type personalities. Yeah. They might use things like pity play and blackmail, emotional blackmail. Yeah. So these are all different characteristics. They might be overly demanding, they might make jokes about you and ridicule you, or they might use other techniques like silent treatment or being very unpredictable, okay? But these doesn't necessarily make them a psychopath, okay? They would have
right.
all of these different techniques. So certain, for example, if somebody uses silent treatment on you, it could be that they just need to learn how to communicate with you better, okay? Or if somebody has got problems with lying, they may need to have a counselling to understand why they feel the need to lie, okay? But
right.
Coupled, so, you know, so the hope depends on how extreme the symptoms are, yeah? And so just because they have some of these things doesn't mean that they that they can't change. It's how they react towards you. So, for example, if they make promises and they say that they're going to change and they don't make any changes whatsoever, then there's a good chance that the relationship has got no hope.
Right.
For example, if they have a history of poor relationships and they never, you know, they never change, then there's a good chance that they are never going to change in the relationship with you. Do you understand?
Yes, yes, I do understand. So do you think there's a time span that you can advise? So for example, if in 1 year they didn't, or 6 months or whatever, do you think there's a time span that people should have to tolerate this? Or?
I would say that, you know, it takes time to understand somebody, to understand what their true character is. Somebody once said to me the rule of three. So if they do something once, you perhaps forgive them. You do something twice, maybe you give them a second chance. If they do them three times, then you can be sure that they're going to continue to keep on doing it. Now, if, for example, it came to, say, a partner who had affairs, okay, I'm not sure that many people would want to give them a third chance. You could be pretty sure that if they were going to be cheating on you, they're never going to change. Because the fact that you've given them one chance and then a second chance means that you're giving them permission to do it to you all of the time.
Right.
So, you know, any kind of toxic relationship takes an enabler to enable their behaviour, okay? Is a dynamic going on between the two. So it's not just the person being the abuser. The person being abused is enabling the abuse. And a lot of people who've been abused will say, well, you know, I didn't expect this to happen to me. I didn't, you know, it wasn't my fault. Well, it wasn't. The problem with the extreme toxic relationship is the victim doesn't know how much they're being abused until it's too late. They aren't aware that they're being victimized until the relationship is well into the relationship, maybe a year on. And sometimes even longer, and then it's too late because they're already well hooked into the relationship, and sometimes it's so dangerous that they can't get out.
I see. How much attracting for the victim this kind of relationship has without the victim is within herself or himself? I mean, do you think if the victim is attracting this relationship into has it's also part of her problem. I mean, she attracted it because she deserves it, because that's her karma, because like attracts like, or what do you think about this?
With the whole karma thing, okay, my personal opinion is we all have a karmic, whatever, if you know, I've done all the past life and karmic ties with this particular man. I don't think it's always that helpful for people to necessarily understand whether you met them in the past life and they did this to you and they did that to you. It's sometimes good to work through that, to kind of work through your feelings, okay, and understand the dynamics of it, yeah. A lot of people have said, you know, I've shared past lives with my psychopath and it's all for my highest good. Most people who come out of these relationships come out of it feeling empowered, because usually it goes back to a negative bonding pattern that they've had in childhood. Not always, but majority. So, I mean, I get emails all the time, multiple emails from women who said, you know, that basically they've been in relationship with these people and it's mirrored a relationship that they've had with perhaps one of their parents that they've never resolved. And so what's happened is that perhaps they've gone out with multiple people who weren't quite so bad until eventually, I talk about it as the universe just keeps upping the volume until they start listening, until eventually they start to realise that they have unresolved issues. And if they don't listen, the universe will just keep sending them a bigger, more amplified version of their unresolved issues. and then they have to deal with it. Most people who've been in relationship with these type of extreme toxic people, they say that they wake up spiritually quicker than they could have ever possibly done in their whole lifetime, because they have no choice to resolve all of their stuff that they've had to resolve before. It's like fast track.
So how much dangerous can actually a toxic relationship be then? So you find yourself
extremely dangerous. Like
for life, you can get killed.
Yeah, life. Life threatening. I mean, I had a recent situation with a woman, highly empathic, intuitive, had completely lost all sense of who she was eventually, and she was at the point where this man was probably would have killed her if she hadn't gotten out, and she's now in a safe refuge. But because they're so very good at manipulating you, she'd lost all sense of who she was. And I'll explain about that a little bit, which is why, you know, the way I work with clients afterwards. She'd lost her whole identity and become almost a clone of what he was. So she ended up feeling suicidal, depressed, and he was trying to leave him. And every time she did that, he threatened her. And she said, you know, if I didn't leave this week or the day that I left, he would have killed me without question. And so it would be, you know, extremely dangerous. So I have multiple cases of women who've been in that situation. And so they end up in a fearful state where they feel they cannot leave. And especially if they've got children and all that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case with me. But, you know, they're so fearful that their whole, you know, their whole basis of everything is based on the fact that they can't get away from these people. So it can be quite dangerous, yes.
Can you give me a couple of examples? Because I'm wondering, I want to learn more about this subject. And I'm sure also many people attend more about it so that they can be careful, be watchful, basically. A couple of scenarios, no, of what could happen. Like, really, some
the kind
stages,
of things that they do.
Yes.
Well, okay. I mean, the kind of things that these psychopathic types do, they will lie about anything. I mean, anything and everything. So, and that is the key. They're pathological liars. They have no conscience. And they are extremely manipulative. They're very good at spotting victims. Perhaps this will give you an example of how they think. They did a prison experiment, and they had 20 women, okay, in a room, and they asked a bunch of psychopaths to choose a target. And out of those 20 women, they picked one woman. And the woman on the surface looked quite confident and fine. She looked absolutely nothing wrong with her. But she walked in a slightly different way to the other women. She didn't look downtrodden, but she did walk differently. They picked her out of all of the 20 women. And interestingly enough, when I did the research, I walk like that. Now, that particular woman was sexually abused as a child. So they can spot hidden clues in people, okay? So this is how they think. You know, we're talking about a different way of thinking to the way we think, okay? So a kind of scenario would be a woman who was in a relationship with one who had come from a childhood abuse, severe childhood abuse, and had been things had happened to her, and had felt totally powerless. So she would often disassociate from the abuse that had happened as a child. So her psychopathic victim, he would use that as a way to go back into the trauma of her childhood. And one of the things that he would do would give her a date rape drug while she was asleep. And then she would wake up. She would be completely paralyzed. So she couldn't move. She couldn't do anything. And since our sense of reality starts to waver, often we're tired because they wear us down, she would wake up and find him doing things with other women in the room. And she would see it, but she'd know something was going on. And then after it would happen, she would talk to him about it, and he would tell her that it was all her imagination, that she was making it all up. And when she finally escaped from the relationship and started to get her memory back, she realized that it wasn't her imagination.
I understand. Yeah, so they're really playing dirty games and completely without conscience, any kind
very
of moral
dirty.
Value against you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, give you an example. The man that I was with, you know, a lot of people criticise him because when I first knew him, he was married. He wasn't towards the end, but he was in the beginning. And he built up a friendship with me, a friendship. No, there was no intimacy. Right. He became friends with my family, with my children, took my children to martial arts classes and what have you. So he was a friend of the family. And then played a lot of sob stories. And one of the things that he did was lie about having cancer. And that was when I had decided that I didn't want to be with him. And so as a result of him realising that I wasn't going to be friends with him, he thought I need to use some more dirty tactics to keep her sucked in. And being a therapist, because he knew my background, and my therapy background is holistic healing, okay? And one of the things I strongly believe in is trying, if possible, not to use Western medicine, okay? And so I had Crohn's disease in the past. Unfortunately, I don't have it anymore. I still have it officially, but unofficially I don't have it. That was many years ago. And he knew that. So when he had his cancer during the period of time, over 2-3 years period, he miraculously went into remission, okay? Now, somebody else may not have believed that, but I did, because I have gone into remission with my Crohn's. When obviously the relationship transpired, the cancer story was completely made up. It was all rubbish. So they will use any tactic that they can to manipulate you. So for somebody else, they might not believe that cancer story, but I would, having had a life-threatening illness like Crohn's, which is very difficult to overcome, and overcome it to some degree by not having any more symptoms. So I would have believed that story quite easily.
Yes, yes. He knew that you could.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, do you understand what I'm saying? So.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah, you know, we're not talking normal tactics. We're talking very, like you said, dirty tactics. You know.
Black.
And,
yes, black tactics.
And,
yeah,
black tactics. It's very dark. That's why I called it Dark Souls. I didn't call it Black Souls. I called it Dark Souls. Yeah.
Right.
Because.
Right.
You know, it's because they're and you know, people say, well, you know, they can't help it. They can't help being the way. Most abusers have been abused. Not always, but most of them have been abused. So, you know, I come from an abusive childhood, and I'm pretty sure he came from an abusive childhood too, not necessarily. So my interest, which would be a really interesting book if somebody were to write it, is what... is the difference between, you know, a child who's abused and a child who decides to grow up and be empathic, kind, conscious, all of that, and then what switches on the trip switch to make them a psychopath. But there's no books on that.
So, Sarah, if somebody realizes that he's in a relationship like this, and he has post-design, etc., what do you think... this person should do to get away of this relationship in a way that it's safe, or
make sure it's safe. So, for example, sometimes you might have to plan it, and you might have to make sure that you, you know, plan your exit. Sometimes it means completely moving out of the area and getting away from them. Literally, it's that dangerous. Yeah, not always. If it's not that dangerous and you don't feel your life threatened, it's immediately leave and leave the relationship. Now, often people won't do that because then they may realise that you're onto them, and then they'll make promises and say, but, you know, I'm going to change and blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, you realise that 2-3 months down the line, they haven't. It takes time. People can stay in these relationships for years, and then eventually they realise that, you know, their soul's just been sucked completely empty. But the best thing to do is leave the relationship, completely break contact with them, and avoid all contact with them as much as possible, which can be difficult if you've got children, you know, because they may use your children against you and things like that. So that can be difficult. But you need to break away from the relationship as soon as it's safe for you to do it. And, you know, and also the other thing which I focused on, which was a lot on the book, was not just breaking away the physical contact, but the energetic links that tie you with them. Because one of the things that bonds you with the abuser is usually sex, so no sex with them, obviously. And also it takes time for those cords to disappear. And often they stay hooked into people for many months or years after. So, you know, the first thing I do with a client, if they've left, is do a cord cut with them so that they've broken the energetic links with them, or do soul retrievals and things like that. Because they really end up feeling totally, it's difficult to explain, but the psychopathic type, let's call them the psychopathic type, doesn't want to own any of their feelings. They don't want to feel shame or what have you. And they are full of shame, anger, guilt, and all of those feelings. So they're projection machines. So what they do is all of those feelings that they don't want to own, they literally dump them onto the person that they're in relationship with. So if somebody's hasn't got good self-esteem, low self-esteem, not feeling confident, they will end up coming out of the relationship feeling exactly how the psychopath really feels deep down. And so the best thing, so that what they need to do is get rid of those feelings, because often those feelings aren't even their own. Obviously, you know, they might feel angry because of the relationship, they might feel shame, but a lot of them are amplified by the fact that they're carrying around the other feelings of the other person. It's very complex. On a spiritual level, it's complex, and it takes time to unravel all of the feelings that you're taking away from them. It's interesting. Not in a good way.
I would like another question is, so what should be the right attitude since the beginning for a person in order to find a good relationship? So what kind of attitude this person should have in order to
find a good relationship?
Yes.
Right. To find a good relationship is to have good self-esteem, good beliefs about yourself, positive beliefs, not overly confident, but to have a good self-image, okay, which I didn't have at the time. Okay, so you need to have good positive self-image, be, you know, and the other thing is be aware of your intuition, okay? Now, your intuition is there for a reason. Now, every person I've spoken to has been in these relationships said that the first time that they met these people, they felt uncomfortable. They felt like there was something wrong, okay? Your intuition is there for a reason.
All right.
Yeah, they've all said it, all of them have said, there was something about this person that made me feel not right, but I didn't listen, okay? So,
And then they got convinced because they were such masters in convincing and manipulating, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So the one thing, if you were to look for a new relationship, is you listen to that gut feeling in the solar plexus that feels comfortable, that doesn't make you have that icky feeling that something doesn't add up. You don't go into a relationship that moves really quickly. If they're saying to you within the first week, let's have sex, back off. If they're telling you they love you within a month or two, back off.
But today everybody probably have sex very, you know, very quickly. I think many people would not listen to you on that one. But
yeah,
I'm not saying...
No, but, okay, but it's interesting because the sex is one of the things that bonds you to them. Okay, now a lot of people don't have protective sex. Not one person I've spoken to who's been in relationship with a psychopath has had protected sex. They don't use protection because they're high risk takers. And to be honest, I don't know why their reasons is. I think they think they're so invincible that they don't think they could actually catch anything. So they don't use protection. Now, one of the things, and this is really interesting, and this is something that people don't understand, is when you have a bonding experience with somebody, you have an emotional bond, you have a chemical bond and a love bond and all of that stuff, you also have a chemical called oxytocin, which is which bonds you even more, yeah? And oxytocin is carried in a man's semen, okay? So when you're in a psychopathic negative bonding relationship with somebody, the more you have sex with them, the more they give you oxytocin, the more you become addicted to them.
Right.
Yeah? So so you are literally becoming addicted to them on a chemical level. This is where people feel like they're in love with them, but they're not. They're addicted to them, and then they start to realize that these people are toxic. It's a negative bonding relationship, and it isn't based on so. So the other thing would be maybe buy some condoms. if you are going to have sex with people, I understand that people have sex, it's quite normal, but they move very quickly, these relationships.
Or I would like to add something here, and I know that most people would also not believe what I'm saying, whatever. But anyway, in the yoga tradition, it's very important at the beginning, especially, in a relationship in general, it's not to ejaculate, okay? So in other words, during the...
Yeah, that's like the time.
The ejaculation, you're giving to the other person vital energy, or anyway, there is that connection that is created where the two auras starts to spin together as one, and you really get into yourself the fluid only, also at an energetical level of the other person. Instead, it would be much better to learn practices, or anyway, not to get to the point. I mean, it's having when I have it, but for some time, just save, don't get until the end. Just have intimacy and some sex protected.
I absolutely agree with you on that, yeah. And I practice tantra myself, although I don't have a boyfriend now, but I would absolutely agree with you on that. Because, on an energetic level, when you actually have somebody's semen inside of you, you're taking their energy on. So that's fine if it's a healthy person. It's great in the long run. But what if they're a toxic person? You are literally taking their toxic energy on. And it can take a long time for that energy to go. I wrote an article about it somewhere that basically you're taking their stuff on a DNA level. So imagine how long it takes you to get rid of it, which is why it takes so long for people to heal from these relationships. Some people take years to get over these relationships, and some people move on quickly, some people take years. Personally, this is my view, but some people disagree. If you have had childhood abuse, my belief is that you are healing on so many levels, because not only have you realized that the relationship is a lie because you're having a relationship with somebody that doesn't really exist, but you start to realize that perhaps they have they're similar to some of your parents, okay? So then you start to realize that perhaps your own childhood was a lie as well, okay? And because we don't want to believe that our parents are like that and blah, blah. And so on one level, you're healing from them. You're healing from all your childhood stuff. And you're healing from the whole thing anyway. And so you end up feeling that your whole life is a complete lie. And so that's like a double-edged sword. And so it can be quite painful for people to come to terms with all of that. And often they'll disconnect not only from the... psychopath, they'll disconnect from the other people in their family or a circle of people that have been abusing them as well over the years. Okay. As a result of their healing.
Are there any other tips for prevention, let's say, in order not to get stuck or not to get into this kind of relationship, but instead of having, going into a healthy relationship? So do you have any other tip that comes into mind at the moment?
For a healthy relationship, working on your self-esteem. If you for one second think that you have issues about your negative, that you have any negative beliefs about yourself, look at those first before you enter a relationship. Because there's a good chance that if you don't, then you're going to attract. So if you've had a relationship that hasn't been good before, that wasn't great, don't jump from that into another relationship.
Right. Let the one first fade away and then...
Yeah, I always use the analogy, don't jump from one frying pan into another one. So say you've had a reasonably, not great relationship. They weren't, a psychopath, but they weren't that, it was a little bit toxic. It didn't feel great. Have a look at the reasons why it was like that. Look at yourself. there's a technique, I call it the mirror technique, yeah, which is basically where if somebody's not being kind to you, so say somebody's really angry with you, so usually there's a reason, like you talk about the mirror thing. It's either because you're being angry at other people or because perhaps you're angry at yourself, okay? So look at those reasons. Look at what it is in you that maybe attracted that person in the first place. Work on that and come to a place of, you know, feeling happy before you go into any relationship. Because if you don't and you're carrying over all those other things, there's a good chance the next one will be worse than the one before. And often I'll speak to women and say, well, the first relationship was all right, and the second one was even worse, and then the third one was, and now I'm in a relationship with a psychopath, because they didn't look at the original issues in the first place. And they've had a history of failed relationships which have gotten worse and worse over time. And that was my case, you know. I didn't have extremely vile, abusive relationships, but they weren't great. So now I know what healthy relationships should be like. I've worked so much on myself that I wouldn't go into another relationship without making sure that I feel comfortable in myself. And the good news is I can spot these people really quickly, so I wouldn't have a relationship with a psychopath again.
Right. So, you know, Tara, where do you find your book? So basically, where do we need to go if we want to get your book?
Well, you can either go to the website or you just go onto Amazon and just type Dark Souls and Sarah Strudwick. You can buy it on there. It's just available through Amazon. But I've got a website with lots of information on various different topics that they can read. It's just free. They can just go and have a read up on different articles.
So your website is noordinarylife.biz.
Yeah, if they go to that one, that's the easiest one, and then there's a link off to the book site.
Yeah.
That's probably the easiest way to do it. Yeah, and there's articles on there and interviews with other professional people about, you know, the dynamics of it and, you know, and how to, you know, be... Okay, somebody who's depressed, and this is really perhaps is worth mentioning, so... What happens is if somebody's depressed, the formula for joy is the complete opposite. So often people are depressed because their focus of attention is on everything outside of themselves. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a relationship with somebody like this, they're constantly thinking, oh, God, why did they do this? Why did they do this to me? Why did they hurt me? Once you understand why they're the way they are and you stop focusing your attention on them, then you can put your attention back to yourself and you can start to be joyful again. And this is, you know, this is really important for people, you know, to use your kind of tool.
To make a choice. It doesn't matter what they did, it's okay. They did that and the effect is that I'm feeling bad, but then you put a choice, exactly, and you say, okay,
like
that's incidental.
No. Yeah, and, you know, you have to, you know, for me, I mean, it's been a year now, I've been completely free of him. And during that year, I wrote the book and put a lot of my energy into that. The last few months, I've just been putting all of that focus into myself, you know, doing work and with clients and really spending a lot of time focusing on me. And obviously up to leading till the relationship was completely finished, I'd been doing work on myself anyway, which was what enabled me to get out of the relationship. But I would say to anybody that their focus needs to be back on themselves, not in a self-centered way, but in, like you said at the beginning, you need to feel joy in yourself. Yeah, you know, you need to be happy. And, I mean, we've spoken before. You've spoken to me a couple of years ago, and my persona was quite different than what it is now.
Well, I'm glad everything is going well anyway with you, and you seem to have, far away, long way from where you were, and you sound so energetic, and so I'm quite happy with this. And do you think also that having, you know, thinking you get into a relationship, instead, as we were saying at the beginning, instead of thinking the relationship as one thing, it really helps to think of the relationship as two separate entities that support each other. So if you can start seeing it like that, you know that there is you, always be you, and there is that person, there will always be that person. How can we support each other or help each other or something? You know, this kind of attitude, do you think is a healthier attitude towards approaching a new relationship and eventually be strong enough to get out of it if you feel and if you see that something is going wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you think along those lines, then you are going to be able to say, okay, I'm going to be leaving. Whereas if you go into it with the view of it being a relationship, then you've tied your whole identity up around that, and then it's hard to leave. There's an expression, George Simon, he's another writer, and he wrote another book called In Sheep's Clothing, which is about the similar types of personalities. And he gave the analogy of a slot machine, a slot machine syndrome, you know, one of those one-armed bandits that you play in Las Vegas. And what happens is you put so much into the relationship, keep on putting pennies in the slot and money in, that you invest so much that to walk away from the relationship or the person that you're with, you think that eventually if you keep on putting more money in or more investment into it, you'll get a payout sometimes. And occasionally you might, just for a few hours or what have you, but there's never going to be a jackpot at the end of it. There's never going to be a jackpot, because you're always going to be on the losing streak. But the reason that people don't always walk away is because they're worried that, you know, if I just keep on investing a little bit more into this relationship, it will work. The minute that they get that they're not going to, it's not a relationship. So, yeah, it's a very healthy for you to think of yourself two separate beings, and then you can spot the signs much more easily, you know, and move away very quickly. And, you know, people who've read the book have said, oh, yes, I've been in relationship with people like that. And you learn to spot them really quickly and move away within minutes. You don't engage, because those people are always going to be around. You can't avoid them, sadly. But, you know, it's the minority. We're not talking about, you know, 50% of the population. We're talking about a very small minority of people.
Yes, yes.
That you need to avoid, but... you know, I don't have a magnet over my head that says, come and get me anymore.
okay, Sarah, thank you so much for calling. I would like, now we have 7 minutes left, and I would like to lead the listeners into a meditation practice.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, is it okay for you? Is there anything else that you want to add so that we can close, and then I will lead them into the practice?
No, not at all. I think, you know, you've covered everything, and also it's important to cover the fact that there are healthy relationships. I know for myself at one point I thought, you know, there's no such thing as a healthy relationship, but there are healthy relationships, and it's really important for people to understand that in the future, even if they've had these kind of relationships, that they can have nice relationships with people in the future. You know, and
focus. Yes, exactly, where your soul is looking at. That's very important, to bring your awareness. My last radio show was entitled Awareness of the Soul, because you bring your awareness towards the evolution of the soul, towards the direction needs to be up, down, instead of thinking that you are dependent, that you don't have enough divine power within you, enough joy or enough calmness or enough, or you're not lucky enough to, so that you have to grab whatever comes to your way.
Oh, no, absolutely, yeah. And,
look up and say, I know there are infinite possibilities. There is also the other side that is infinite good. And especially also a message I would like to say, you're not alone in your life. Left alone. There are... beautiful beings. There is God, first of all. There is who for you is the bridge to God, there for you as soon as you start connecting. You have help beyond what you can see beyond what you think is your strength or your weaknesses. You know what I mean? Yet you are not alone. Ask for help. Ask for clarity. Ask for strength. Ask for protection, because it is very important at some point to understand that we can't do everything alone, because we are not alone. We're not even supposed to be left alone. You know what I mean? Do you agree with this, Sarah? What do you think about this?
No, absolutely. I agree with that. And I just wanted to point out something that, you know, this is about the trust in your intuition and listening to the universe or what have you. You know, I'm a big fan of animal totems and things like that, yeah? And when I was in the deepest despair of...
Sarah is gone, and nothing wrong with her phone, probably. I'm not sure. However, then, guys, I will lead you into the meditation. Probably we can have Sarah back for our shows. And I'm so sorry, and it doesn't matter. Okay, Sarah, thank you so much for coming in. It's been a great show. And now, guys, you close your eyes. We have 4 minutes left. Breathe in deeply. Tense all your muscles. And then breathe out. Relax. As you breathe in, you tense your muscles and relax. Close your eyes gently. Bring your awareness at your heart level. Slowly breathe in and out. Let the breath lead you into an always deeper state of relaxation. I will count down from 10 down to 1, 10, 9, you go deeper, 8, finding yourself more centered, becoming aware of who you are, 7, 6, 5, perceiving the center in your spine, 4, 3, almost there to your inner space, start projecting your soul to the deeper dimensions of yourself. 2, reaching the handle of a door, opening it. 1, you're there. What do you see? How does your inner space look like? While being in this place, take a look at yourself. Bring your awareness to your emotions. There is a part of you, we have many bodies within, many layers of bodies energetically, and take your awareness, bring your awareness to your emotional body, where all your emotions reside as energy. And have a look at your mental body, where all your ideas and thoughts reside. And now bring your awareness to your spiritual body. Finally, include your physical body as a product of all your other bodies. Your ideas, your spirit, and your emotions. Experience yourself as a big field of energy, which includes all these bodies at once. They are yourself, only at different levels. And feel your energy. How does it feel like? Take a moment. We will only do part of this meditation now. What I would like you to do is upon this, even when the show is finished, start scanning your body for dark or empty spots in your emotional body, in your mental body, and in your spirit. First start with your emotions, then go with your ideas, then go to your spirit, and then integrate the result of the meditation into your body. What you need to do is to find these dark spots or empty spots and fill them up with light. Start with your emotions, start with your mind, start, go into the spirit. And once you have healed all your bodies, bring it back into yourself. And thank you for listening to Life Open Miracles with Vincent Sandee. Come to my website and connect with me, www.joycelestial.com. Sign up for my newsletter. And thank you, Sarah, for coming. I wish you were here, but thank you for being here. It's been a very interesting topic, and we would like to have you back again. Thank you so much for everyone for listening, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye from Vincent Sandy.